Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, September 20, 2022. South Sudanese health officials prepare to block the deadly Ebola virus from crossing into South Sudan.
At the moment, there is no reason to panic. And we don't have any case in South Sudan, but we are putting measures in place to be able to detect.
And the UN Secretary General calls for efforts to realize the Sustainable Development Goals.
Each peril is pushing the Sustainable Development Goals further out of reach. And in the face of such perils, it is tempting to put our long-term development priorities to one side.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An official with South Sudan's Ministry of Health says the government is ramping up efforts to prevent the spread of the deadly Ebola virus from entering the country following a confirmed case in the central Mabinde district of neighboring Uganda. The Director General of Preventive Health Services at South Sudan's Ministry of Health calls on citizens not to panic, adding, the Ministry of Health and its partners are putting up standard operating procedures to detect and respond to the virus should it cross the border into South Sudan. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
The health authorities in Uganda have declared an outbreak of Ebola after a case of Sudan strain was confirmed in Mubende district in the central part of the country. The Uganda Virus Research Institute confirmed the case after testing a sample taken from a 24-year-old man who showed symptoms and later died. The WHO's Africa office said in a statement that the case was of the Sudan strain after Ugandan health authorities investigated six suspicious deaths in the district this month. There are currently 8 suspected cases receiving care in a health facility, according to WHO's Africa office, adding that it was helping Uganda's health authorities with the investigation and deploying staff to the affected area. Matshidiso Moeti, WHO's Africa Regional Director, said, quote, Uganda is no stranger to effective Ebola control. Thanks to its expertise, action has been taken quickly to detect the virus, and we can bank on this knowledge to halt the spread of infections. The Director General of Preventive Health Services at the South Sudan's Ministry of Health, John Rumunu, urges South Sudanese citizens to remain calm. He says the ministry's officials and its partners are preparing to prevent the spread of the deadly virus into South Sudan.
At the moment, there is no reason to panic. And we don't have any case in South Sudan, but we are putting measures in place to be able to detect and respond to any case of EVD should it happen.
Dr. Rumunu says South Sudan has been under high alert and will increase its surveillance response at several border screening centers.
When there was Ebola in DRC, we had in place readiness in all the hotspot areas. These hotspot areas are counties which are the halfing border with Uganda and DRC. And now it is in Uganda, we are going to build on what we have on ground. And this includes making sure that there is a standard operating procedure, there is a system for screening in place, there is intervention for public health measures. And if there is detection of a suspect, we will collect a sample and it will be brought to Juba for testing. We have capability to test Ebola in Juba.
He says South Sudan is at high risk and that necessary preventive measures should be put in place because Ugandans cross into South Sudan through the border of Nimli on a daily basis.
We have border with Uganda, and there is movement of people between the two countries. So the Ministry of Health and partners are staging up readiness to ensure that we have put in place a standard operating procedures to detect and respond to EVD should it cross the border.
The WHO said there had been 7 previous outbreaks of the Ebola Sudan strain, 4 in Uganda and 3 in Sudan. It said Uganda last reported an outbreak of Ebola Sudan strain in 2012 and an outbreak of the Ebola Zaire strain in 2019. The WHO said during vaccination of high-risk people with the Irebo vaccine had been highly effective in controlling the spread of Ebola in recent outbreaks in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and elsewhere, but the vaccine had only been approved to protect against the Zaire strain. Another vaccine produced by Johnson & Johnson may be effective, but has yet to be specifically tested against the Sudan strain. The Ebola virus is a deadly disease that affects humans and non-human primates. Symptoms include unexplained bleeding, high fever, severe headache, muscle pain, weakness, and vomiting. The virus is spread through body fluids, such as the blood of an infected person. The Democratic Republic of Congo, which neighbors Uganda to the west, is currently battling an outbreak of Ebola virus disease, previously categorized as a hemorrhagic fever. According to the WHO, the disease is transmitted to people from animals and spreads through human-to-human infection. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiden in Juba.
Commercial airline companies operating light aircrafts in South Sudan say they have suspended flights to Bor because majority of their clients have decided to travel by road. An employee of a company known as New Life Airline says the construction of the Juba-Bor highway has affected airline businesses to the Jonglei State Capital Bor. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayer reports from Juba.
The operation manager for Panda Airline, Malwala Duke, says some companies have been forced to close down because of poor sales of tickets by clients from Jonglei State Capital Bor.
Now, you know, business is not in that position again. You know, as a owner of the company, you find there are some difficulties, maybe where you are renting and everything. That's why maybe some companies have closed down.
Francis Atim, who works for New Life Airline Company, says flights from Juba to Bor have been on daily basis until recently when the number of passengers started to reduce.
The road now is well. People are just moving by land, and maybe the government official or the NGOs, these are the our clan users, just come now, maybe one in a week or for a while. And the business actually is down.
Up to 30 vehicles travel each day between Bor and Juba, carrying goods and South Sudanese visiting loved ones in the two towns. Simon Akwei, senior coordinator with the African Resource Corporation, or ARC, the company constructing the Juba-Bor Road, says the condition of the road has attracted some senior government officials to abandon chartering flights to Juba and Bor.
We find our dignitaries driving every weekend to go and resolve their issues in Bor, and then they drive back on Sunday evening, including ministers, MPs. You see, when our president came, he went to Bor, did the rally, opened the university, drove back to Juba within the shortest time possible. I have seen some of my friends who used to operate airlines, they are now operating north. We wish that the whole country is connected with the roads so that we can transport goods, services, you know, and also cut costs for our citizens.
Drivers and conductors of public service minibuses are busy touting passengers to board at Bor Bus Park in Gumbo. Ngori Akwan, a driver of a commercial passenger van, says he's making profit while transporting passengers along the 200-kilometer Juba-Bor Road.
Before, it was difficult for us to move, but right now it is easier for us, and we are proud of our road. Also, we are enjoying it as a citizen of Southern Sudan. and also as a citizen of Bor town. Riak says before the construction of the Juba Bor Road, it took him more than 12 hours to reach Bor. He says most of the drivers now take 2 hours to travel from Juba and Bor, and he adds that some drivers are making good profit. Akwei says South Sudan could export fish since the traveling time between Juba and Bor has reduced.
The Congolese, the Ugandans, and people all the way from Brazzaville, Congo-Brazzaville in West Africa, they are all coming to Bor. And they are taking this dried fish and salt fish, right, to their countries. And we also realize this dried fish doesn't find itself in the Gulf, in Saudi Arabia, in UAE, United Arab Emirates, and in other countries. This road has actually put money in the hand of the youth.
He says the multi-billion dollar road financed with crude oil from the government of South Sudan is expected to reach Bor town by the end of this year. On December 9, 2021, the United States Department of Treasury sanctioned African Resource Corporation Limited and Winners Construction Company Limited, owned by Benjamin Bolmer. Treasurer's Office of Foreign Asset Control said the companies were owned and controlled by a sanctioned personality. In December 2017, Bolmel and two companies in his vast corporate network, Thai South Sudan Crusher, Aggregates and Building Materials Company, ABMC, and Home and Away Limited, were designated by the United States for their involvement in corruption in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
The 2022 United Nations General Assembly got underway in New York with a congregation dedicated to the body's long-term metrics known as the Sustainable Development Goals. But speakers at the event, including United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, were mindful of the pressing nature of global crisis.
We meet at a moment of great peril for our world. Conflicts and climate catastrophe, mistrust and division, poverty, inequality and discrimination, rising costs of food and energy, unemployment and declining incomes, massive displacement and dislocation, and the ongoing effects of a global pandemic. Lack of access to finance for developing countries to recover, a crisis not seen in a generation. Each peril is pushing the Sustainable Development Goals further out of reach. And in the face of such perils, it is tempting to put our long-term development priorities to one side, to leave them for a sunny day, but development cannot wait. Young people and future generations are demanding action. We cannot let them down. This is a definitive moment. All of you here today and those tuning in from around the world give me immense hope that we can put our hands on the wheel of progress and steer a new course. That we can rescue the Sustainable Development Goals and get back on track to building the better world that leaves no one behind. The world has a long to-do list. We need finance and investment from the public and private sectors. We need a reformed financial architecture that benefits developing countries, providing critical financing and debt relief. This is the only sustainable pathway to address the obscene inequalities that exist in every country while ensuring that the world doesn't slide into a recession.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a top African bank executive says the continent should produce its own food. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
The president of the African Export-Import Bank says Africa should move away from food aid toward sustainable food production on the continent. Benedict Orama says a partnership between Africa and its international partners will help strengthen local agriculture. This, he says, will also encourage subsistence farmers to develop agricultural business that can improve their lives.
You see, the problem with food aid is that it creates dependence. I'm not saying that when we are in dire need that people can't come to help. But we should rejig the way we do that so that in that process we build the foundation to make sure that we say never again, we don't have to rush to help again. So what is done today, although it's beginning to change, is that when we have famine, we have extreme hunger crisis, donors rush food from all over the world, but they do not get it from Africa. So what that has then done is that people give the food they have, those who are donating give what they have. And over time, our tastes have changed. What it then means is that we've developed the taste to eat the cheap food that has been donated. So we are no longer cultivating ours, what we normally eat. So it has created huge import dependence. So when we don't have money to pay for the import, we go hungry again. Not because we cannot produce, but because our tastes have changed and we are import dependent. And we are not able to generate the foreign exchange to continue to import those things. So we have recurrent food.
So, Dr. Orama, what specific steps do you think African countries can take to reverse this or correct this?
It doesn't have to be only African countries. It has to. That's why I gave you this background I right. gave earlier. It also has to go global, or the donor community and the African countries. Africa is a huge continent. As much of that as you talk about food farming here, in other parts of Africa, there's surplus. The problem is that there's no moving. We're not moving those surplus from other parts of Africa to where you have scarcity, as will happen normally in a country. So what we are saying is, first, to stimulate overall food production on the continent, the donor community, if there's a food crisis in one part of Africa, they should try to supply that part from other parts of Africa where you have surplus before you start going out if you don't have enough. The second thing is that the demand created by the donor community and also ourselves should be enough to also stimulate production of food in many parts of Africa. What we've done, and we and WF World Food Program have done something unique in this area. In July, we entered in a memorandum of understanding ourselves, AfriximBank, WFP, and Africa Continental Free Trade Area Secretariat. That MOU is in an amount of $2 billion. So we are doing, jointly with WFP, a blended financing to enable us to provide funding to small growers in Africa and the commodity traders to make it possible for WFP to then buy from them to supply parts of Africa where we have food problem using AFCFTA rules and protocols.
That was Benedict Orama, president of African Export-Import Bank. He spoke with my colleague Peter Clotty in New York. Somali army commanders say their forces killed more than 100 Al-Shabaab militants during weekend offensives to retake territory from the Islamist militant group. Witnesses say the troops also recaptured two villages that Al-Shabaab had held for more than a decade. Mohamed Desanyi reports from Mogadishu.
The Somali National Army said Monday that troops launched a fresh offensive against Al-Shabaab in the central Hiran region over the weekend. Senior army commanders in Hiran, who spoke to VOA via phone, said that fierce firefights between the military and Al-Shabaab began early Saturday, especially in the villages of Abori and Yasaman. They told VOA that 75 Al-Shabaab militants were killed in the fighting in Yasaman and 30 in the vicinity of Abori. Local residents told VOA via WhatsApp that troops took control of both villages, which had been under Al-Shabaab control for more than a decade. Speaking to media at the front line, Abdulfatah Hassan Afra, the former governor of Hiran, said troops are defeating the enemy of Somali people, referring to Al-Shabaab. He says, our victories are bringing more victories, and it is coming one after the other, and their defeat will bring them more defeat. By the will of Allah, God, we are wishing that they will be cleared out of the country. Somalia's information ministry said Sunday that the army's recent offensives have killed 200 Al-Shabaab fighters and liberated 30 villages from the group in all. Malik Abdullah is a member of the Somali Federal Parliament from Hiran. He told VOA via WhatsApp that the fighting in Hiran also involved local militia, known as Mawislay. He said residents of the village have had enough of Al-Shabaab. He says the reason why the people of Hiran or the people of this region fight is because they could not bear the hardship they faced day and night. He says they stood up to survive after Al-Shabaab blew up their water wells and their village burned. Al-Shabaab has yet to comment on the army and the information ministry's claims. But in a video released by the group media wing Sunday night, spokesman Ali Mahmoud Rage, known as Ali Dere, said the group is ready for the war that Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud declared on them. Rage warned Mogadishu residents to stay away from hotels that are frequented by Somali government officials. President Mahmoud, who was elected in May, announced that his administration will wage a total war against the Al-Shabaab network after the group attacked a hotel in Mogadishu, killing more than 20 people and wounded at least 100 others. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Still on issues in the Horn of Africa, Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud tells VOA that he discussed new strategies to fight the Al-Shabaab militants while visiting Washington. The president sat down for an exclusive interview with Abdirahma Yabaro, the head of VOA's Somali service, to talk about his trip.
Well, in the last 2 days I was here in D.C., I met with the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Lloyd, who received me in his office in the Pentagon. We have a very good and fruitful discussion about our common objective of fighting and eliminating the menace of terrorism in Somalia, in the Horn of Africa, and globally. We have also revived the defense pact or defense agreement that we had with the United States. The United States being the major partner in Somalia, we have agreed that we further improve the relationship and the working together. And then the same, I met the White House staff, the National Security Advisor of the President and his team, and the Homeland Security chief as well. I also met the Secretary of State in the State Department, and I met the Treasury Department. All of them, we've discussed about the improving the relationship, working relationship between Somalia and those agencies of the United States of America. And all these discussions were really fruitful, and the Somali people will see soon the outcome and the fruits of these discussions.
Thank you, Mr. President. You are the only Somali president historically that was elected twice. And with the experience that you had from the previous years, what's the new things that you're going to use? How are you going to tackle the problems of Al-Shabaab, for example, this time?
Well, Al-Shabaab was there in 2012, 2017, when I was in the office for the first time. And the war against Al-Shabaab in those days and today is a bit different. Al-Shabaab become more complex and they become very sophisticated. And now we've changed the strategies that we are fighting. We're developing new strategies, new approaches. And we shared all those new strategies and approaches to the United States government, which we really happen to be on the same page for all these issues. So the challenges of this term I'm meeting is quite different. The security, Al-Shabaab is a major one. The droughts and the victims of the climate change and environmental impact is another one. Humanitarian challenges that existing, preventing the humanitarian to the drought victims to move to go into the famine phase is another challenge. So there are multiple challenges in Somalia of today, which was not there in my first term, or which were there in a different shape. We shared those challenges with the United States government. Some challenges we are both of us facing commonly between United States and the Somali government, and some are specific for Somalia. So those who are common, the two of us, we are working together and we develop tools and mechanisms to work together. And those who are specific for Somalia, we have agreed that the United States government will support Somalia to overcome those challenges and change those challenges into opportunities.
Thank you, Mr. President. As soon as you elected on this current president's office, you have traveled to a number of states in neighboring countries. And if you sum it up, what was the outcome of those meetings that you had with the neighboring countries? And if you evaluate, what is Somalia's relationship to the neighboring countries today?
Well, when I came to the office, some of these countries were, the relationship was a bit severe. Some were in good. Those we were having good relationship, we further improved and continued. Those we were, our relationship was a bit severe, and we bring back the relationship, and we started to work together. So it was strategically based on my slogan of Somalia in peace with itself and in peace with the rest of the world. So the Somalia of today cannot afford to have outside challenges or outside enemies. So we want to remain zero enemy outside within our context. So these were successful trips, and a few countries that are remaining we will visit soon.
That's Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud speaking with Abdirahma Yabaru, the head of VOA's Somali service. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. For world news, go to voanews.com. If you miss this broadcast, go to voanews.com/South Sudan. We now take you back to South Africa with Brenda Fassi and the song Vulindela. I'm your host, John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.